UFC 300 is finally here, and the Killshot crew is together early in the week to break it all down. I feel like we've just been waiting. The last few cards has just been a build-up, a time killer.
We got to go early more often.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other story, but to get to what is the card of the decade, top to bottom, just like the first fight of the night, studs. The last fight of the night, studs everywhere. You know, one debutante on this entire card, just one that we haven't seen before in the UFC, and she is a badass in her own right. So we've got
this is a fun one. There's one fight on this card that honestly I'm kind of like meh. What fight is it? See, we all have the same, but there's one out of 13. There's one fight where I'm like, it's fine.
I have two that I'm on that train with. But I think it's got to be Holm Kayla.
Kayla does enough for me there.
Nickel Brundage, because not that fun to watch.
Nope. I'm on Marina Rodriguez and Jessica Andrade. Yeah.
That fight's going to score, man. That fight's going to score too. That's fine. That fight.
My biggest problem about Nickel, and we can talk about it, is they did everything right for this card except putting Bo Nickel on the main card. Like, come on.
Bo Nickel's the one on the main card. How about the first fight of the night? Cody Garbrandt, Davison Figueiredo.
Yeah. Instead, you got Bo Nickel and Cody Brundage.
Well, let's talk about this first fight.
I hope Cody Brundage is getting pay-per-view points. It's the biggest payday of his career.
Brundage. So, you don't like that they did put him on the main card?
Like, why is it? Why is Cody Brundage in the main card?
Yeah, well, that I agree with.
So much other shit to talk about.
Because Bo is you know, he's.
Too much love, but I'm nitpicking.
All right, Figueiredo, let's get it started. We're gonna go bottom to the top, break down this entire card. We got bets. We got DFS plays, the primary focus for DraftKings, and just an overall breakdown of this card. Starting at the top, we have got Garbrandt versus Figueiredo. As I said, Figueiredo, big favorite here, -310. Comeback on Cody, +260. This one, I'm a little surprised. So over 1.5 rounds, -190. Fight ends inside the distance, just -180. So, you know, I have a way. I'm really curious of your guys' opinions, but neither of these guys generally do a lot of grappling. They're both wild strikers. Figueiredo, probably slightly better. So, and Garbrandt, questionable chin, especially when he gets crazy out there. So I think the common consensus is that Figueiredo will just catch him at some point. But I do want to say this about Cody, that I feel like he could dance around. If he does the type of fight that he did against Dominic Cruz and just kind of points up Figueiredo, this could be a low-scoring decision type win also. So there's a wide range of outcomes for me. Monk, how do you see it? Like, I see a wide range on this fight, including a version that's a low-scoring kind of decision Garbrandt, you know, John Dodson style piece you up fight.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, first of all, you guys alluded, first fight of the night, absolute banger after banger. It's going to, I'm so excited. But yeah, I think there is a possibility, just like his last fight that you were talking about, Geek, where Figueiredo beats Rob Font very handily. I was there in Austin, watched it happen. It was great. I like Rob Font, but seeing that was just nice. He walked away only scoring 76 points, so I definitely see where you're coming from here. Garbrandt, the obvious big issue is his chin, and the unfortunate, I mean, going down to flyweight and getting KO'd by Kai Kara France is like a problem when you go down 10 pounds and you're still getting knocked out. You're going down or going, I mean, you guys at 125 are knocking you out, man. What's 135 going
to
look like?
It's that weight cut, though.
Maybe
at 125. That point, we're right. At that point, we're right on brand with what Cody would have been happening for Cody Garbrandt. So it does worry me, his chin. That said, it has looked better. Kelleher, definitely, you know, not the best striker in the world. Definitely a guy that does have power, though. And Cody ate 4.5 strikes a minute for 3 minutes until he got the job done. So we'll see. I think Figueiredo has less of a chance to actually KO him, although that is a possibility, especially moving up in weight a little bit. But I think he can get his wrestling off but I am worried about the dancing around, like you said. So I agree. A lot of options for this one to go. I'm favoring Figueiredo personally, but at 9,100, that's kind of a little bit of a question mark, just because I don't know what he's going to look like at 135. If Cody Garbrandt has improved, if he's continuing to improve over Jones, Kelleher, and he's working his way back up, you know, I don't want to put a bunch of 9,100 in a three-round fight that might not score well. So I am going to have some Garbrandt picking Figueiredo to win, but I'm a little hesitant to play a lot of them.
Monk, you kind of summed it up pretty well in that I'll take a little bit stronger of a stand. I'm picking Davis and Figueiredo. This line's too wide. Cody Garbrandt should not be 3-1 against Cody Garbrandt. He was a 125 weight bully. He's up at 35. Mm-hmm. He does have a lot of power, has some grappling upside, but Cody Garbrandt's got good takedown defense. He's going to have the slicker hands. I think Davison just got more power and really more power and likely more volume. It kind of depends what kind of Cody Garbrandt we see. Cody Garbrandt is fight old, by the way. Like, I know age-wise, I believe he's younger than Figueiredo. He's got a lot of miles on the tire, and that's when some of these knockout issues are going to show themselves. But Davison at his price, probably got to get it done in the first round. I mean, I know those second round wins can kind of sneak up on you, but you got Gaethje for less, Wei Li for 100 more, all guys we're going to talk about later. It kind of comes down to the cliche DraftKings tout breakdown, but I think it's the truth here. And then I'm picking Figueiredo, but Garbrandt's the better DFS play. He just is. He's cheaper. He's super live for a win. There's a couple dogs I like more, but I think he's a solid secondary option. I'm going to tell you later, there's some other dogs I hear people talking about that I'm burying, and Garbrandt's going to get a decent amount of exposure from me. One of the better dog plays on the card, and he's probably the best dog play that people aren't talking about.
That's a good point. That's like a good point.
The other dogs I think that I'm going to be on that people are talking about, I think there's a consensus of the live ones. A couple I'm going to go against, but he's the best that people aren't talking about. So picking Davison, I'm going to be rooting for Garbrandt, and I think he's super live for a win.
Yeah, Davison only scores well enough at 9,100 if he gets a first round finish. Let's keep it real here. Mm-hmm. And the odds of that happening are not great. According to the oddsmakers, doesn't mean it can't happen, but let's see if we have a first round finish.
Well, plus even when he does go to decision and scores well, those are mostly 5-round fights. We're not dealing with that here.
He's got four fights against Brandon Moreno we're talking about too. Yeah, Garbrandt ain't no Brandon Moreno.
He's plus 375 to win in the first round. Okay. That is your condition, your fantasy production win condition for Figueiredo. If you look at his stats, if you look at Cody's stats, neither one of them show a guy that scores well. Three strikes per minute, not a ton of grappling upside for Figueiredo, especially against 80% takedown defense, Cody Garbrandt. So, I think Figueiredo here is live for the GPP only fast finish. Outside of that, not interested. Cody Garbrandt can piece up, he's got a couple ways he could win. The most likely one is a low scoring decision where he just stays to the outside, doesn't get crazy out there. Cause if he gets crazy, he's getting knocked out. That's what always happens to him. But if he keeps it under control, he might be able to piece up a decision. In a million years, I would never bet Figueiredo minus 300 here. I agree with you, Sniper. That is bananas. It is way too wide. These guys are both good. Speaking of guys that are both good, oldies but goodies, Jim Miller, Bobby Green.
God, I love this.
How have we not seen this fight already?
God, I love this fight.
How has this not happened before? Jim Miller, UFC 100, UFC 200, now UFC 300. He's been in 300 UFCs.
Insane.
He's been around for a while.
You wouldn't even think that something like that would be possible.
Yeah, and he won in UFC 100 and UFC 200. Can he keep the streak going against Bobby King Green?
This is head versus heart for me.
I don't. You guys have a much stronger take on this fight that you like. I don't know. Recent Jim Miller has been really good, but not great.
And he's fighting way down. Bobby Green's made a run and has been fighting up. And it's the problem is there's so many other killers and high scoring potentials on this card. The way both these guys fit, a fight. I just don't see it being high scoring. I just, Jim Miller's, unless Bobby Green is still in the shadow realm from the Jalen Turner knockout, which is possible, I just don't see how Jim Miller really gets it done. Bobby Green's got good takedown defense. He's going to have better striking. Jim Miller's fun, better grappler. The comeback from, I love Jim Miller. Jim Miller's one of my favorite fighters. This is, in my opinion, a nightmare matchup for him. And I have a hard time getting behind it for DFS because of all the other killers.
What is so terrible about this matchup for Jim Miller?
He's not going to outstrike Bobby Green. And Bobby Green's got good takedown defense. I don't think he can get Bobby Green down and secure him to use that jiu-jitsu advantage he has.
And he's got infinite cardio, too.
Cardio might be an issue. I mean,
Green. Bobby, Green, not going to get tired. I mean, Jim Miller, we're not talking Lyme disease Jim Miller anymore, thank God. It's just, I think it's going to be standing, and that's just a problem. That's just a problem for Jim Miller in this matchup.
I mean, that's fair.
They both have more than 45 career fights. That's so stupid.
So you like Green to win this fight, but not to score well enough to matter all that much on DraftKings.
Correct.
Let's get a look at the inside the distance number. I forgot to look at it before. 50-50, minus 125 goes the distance, Monk. So not a whole lot there. If we take a look at the stats for these two guys, obviously Bobby Green landing 6 strikes per minute with Miller only 3, but Miller is much busier generally, at least attempting takedowns. Averaging, both of them average a couple takedowns per fight, or 1.5 for 1.2 for Bobby Green. Bobby Green takedown defense, as you mentioned before, a solid but not impenetrable 74%, but that is established over a long ass career. So, I mean, that's probably a pretty accurate read that he's pretty decent at it.
Yeah. And I pretty much agree with Sniper. It's head versus heart here, rooting for Jim Miller. I mean, obviously you want to see the guy succeed. Nothing against Bobby Green. I also love, I mean,
if you, both you, cool.
Yeah, exactly. Most people love watching Bobby Green fight. The Jalen Turner one was rough. 2 good wins before that, you know, sub Tony Ferguson. This was in 2023, though. And then Grant Dawson was, I'm not going to say a fluke, but kind of fluky. Scored a shitload of points there.
One of the biggest upsets of the year.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, I was like, oh, by the time I'll get home, this fight will be in the second round. I hadn't even turned yet off the road I was on. It was over. But yeah, he's generally not putting up. I mean, he's putting up decent volume, especially in these shorter fights. But if this goes to decision, and Jim Miller, 17 losses, that might sound like a lot to you, but he's got 58,000 fights, only been finished 5 times professionally.
Jim Miller has more fights.
Yeah. only finished 5 times professionally. So Green is tough. Jim Miller is getting up there. But I tend to think this goes a little longer. I think Sniper summed it up very well. Jim Miller's going to have a hard time getting this to the ground. Bobby Green's a good striker, powerful striker at times, and a good counter striker as well. It's going to be attritional. I got Green decision. And like you said, Geek, I'm probably leaning fade on DraftKings a little bit. I just don't see how it scores well. And I'm going to avoid it for cash as well.
Yeah, this is super tournament only. I'm looking at both guys. Listen, I would say Jim Miller certainly could find his way to a submission somehow or another.
The scenes, dude. Can you guys just imagine for half a second Jim Miller winning? Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's a karmic thing that he kind of needs to win this fight because he's won at the previous, you know, centennial UFC events. So, like, there's a karmic thing there.
Imanari roll to knee bar.
How does Bobby Green score well? He just starts piecing him up late. Jim Miller starts to gas. I mean, late, I can see a scenario KO. Like that.
Late second round KO where Miller just wears it. Green throws good volume, gets 2 full rounds of volume. And
yep.
Jim Miller has been my cheat code for underdog winner on DraftKings. This dude, I feel like he's been a cheat code for me for years. I can't quit him. He's the Colo of UFC. I can't quit him. I'm going back to it. I don't care. And it's for the past performance. Like, I can't tell you how many times I've loaded up on this guy as an underdog and he always comes through. I'm going with it. Somehow he pulls it off. That's what I'm going with. He pulls it off, Sniper. I don't know how.
I hope he does. I'm rooting for him. I hope he does.
Great.
Yeah. Speaking, you know, one of the most, I don't know, for me, difficult fighters to kind of figure out has been Jessica Andrade, he's tough to figure out, man. You know, one day she looks like shit. Next day she looks like a killer. She's beating Rose Namajunas. She's getting knocked out in 2 seconds I think it was Zhang Weili. Like, it is, I don't know how to figure
Aaron
this one
Blanchfield
out.
Blanchfield knocked her out.
Blanchfield is knocking her out. Like, what the hell's going on here? She looks amazing one day, terrible the next. I think a lot of it has to do with when she went. It was going back and forth from 115 to 125, like where she looks so much less good at 125 than she does at 115, even though in our minds that shouldn't make that big of a difference, but yet it does. And here we are back down at 115 for Andrade, where she belongs. Taking on Marina Rodriguez. Super close fight. Minus 135, Andrade. M-Rod, plus 115. Fight goes the distance. Minus 140. Monk, I'll start with you. There's a lot of stats to pour into here. You know, when I think of Marina Rodriguez, I think of can't stop a takedown. But a great fighter when she's standing. Right? Can she stop the takedowns from Andrade? Andrade's not that great of a takedown artiste either, but she can get it done when she tries. And, you know, she had a head slam of Namajunas that knocked her the fuck out. So she can get it done. Is it happening?
Yeah, you made a great point about the changing in weight classes, being back down at strawweight, even despite the last two being at strawweight. She took, you know, or outside of the Dern fight, Suarez and Jan, where she took two L's down at strawweight.
Those are nasty opponents.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like
top tier, obviously. Yeah, for sure.
Want to see Weili Tatiana. Can we just get there, please?
Oh, God.
That's the fight I want.
Right. Yeah, we need a Weili win this weekend.
Sorry about it.
Yeah, give me. And then she scores 131 against Mackenzie Dern. Just absolutely goes off there. And that's what you want with you want strawweight Jessica Andrade, because while over her career she scores an incredible 4.65 DraftKings points per minute, at strawweight, guys, it's 5.5. It's 5.54. She scores 10 points a minute inside the distance at strawweight, 124.5 per win. Where was the other? Oh, yeah, 78% takedown accuracy. Is that right? No, I must have that. That must be the wrong stat.
Hold up.
I think she's completed five. I don't know. I'm looking at, I usually don't look at the chart I'm looking for that's separated
here we go. In the weight classes. Monk. It's on screen, baby. Takedown accuracy, 42% for Maria, 54% for Jessica.
Actually, it is. That's pretty damn good. 54%. Can Marina stop the takedowns? Career, she is at 66. I believe that. Yeah, that's on the screen as well.
She's not stopping these takedowns.
She's allowing 1.67 per 15 minutes already. She controls no grappling time, so we're not gonna expect reversal points. I'm not gonna expect much control time. And Andrade could just come in here and look like a freaking truck, man. So I like Andrade. This is the first time, and I haven't fact checked when the last time was, but it's been a year since we've seen 8100s. 18 months.
It's been a minute, right?
I can go back and look. I probably will at some point this week. I'll tag DFS Army and make a tweet about it. But it's been a while, as my guy Aaron, what's his name, from Stained would say. So I don't remember his last name, damn it. I think this is a good
it's like a early good 2000s music reference, right, for the people.
Wow, exactly. I know. 81 for somebody that is consistently putting up ridiculous scores in wins at strawweight against a girl that kind of can't defend takedowns and doesn't have any wrestling. Yeah, I will be playing a ton of Andrade. That said, we have seen her get just bodied on the feet. So I'll have a tiny bit of Marina, but I'm personally not too confident in that, especially since she's now the highest expense or the most expensive underdog, technically, kind of, if you look at it like that.
Sniper, you know, would you agree that with Monk that Jessica Andrade got dumps like a truck?
not like Norbert Dumont. Shout out Laura Senko. look, I think regardless, I don't know how you get behind Rodriguez on DraftKings unless you think she's going to knock out Jessica Andrade. I mean, I guess Blanchfield did, but it seems like a low percentage outcome.
How does Blanchfield knock you out?
Andrade is so worried about the takedown and it's just not there. And I think she took the fight on short notice. I think I'm not 100%
sure. I think that was
sure.
a short notice fight. That was a short notice.
So yep. like, there's just so many other outcomes in the card I'm looking for. I'm looking at that. Rodriguez is just not going to make the cut. I think Andrade is better. She's got the grappling upside. If anyone's going to put up a better score, I think it's Andrade. I think Rodriguez is again, just kind of one dimensional. She's good. She's a good fighter. I think Andrade is better all around as long as the wheels haven't come off yet because she's old. I think Andrade is the pick. And the only one, even if you disagree with that, I don't see how you get behind Rodriguez on DraftKings. Can't do it.
So vastly different scores. Yeah. One never scores well and one usually does.
I mean, perfect example. The other fights in this range, are you going to play Jessica Andrade? And even that's why Andrade is in a very high play. You got Andrade and Rodriguez. The three fights they're going to be competing for ownership on are Rakic Prochazka, Pajeda Hill, the main event, and Sterling Cater. How the fuck do you play one of these ladies at 8,100? It's hard outside of like 10% in MMEs.
Such better fights, but I'm going to give props to Andrade a little more sniper than you are. Andrade has come through.
She has the upside.
Much like Jim Miller. Andrade has come through for me many, many times on DraftKings with monster score. Again, that's why those losses, the weird ones, are always so disappointing. You're like, how is this happening? But, you know, stylistically, when she's lost, she's lost. Look at who she's lost to. And I'm just going to throw this up on screen, Monk. She lost to Suarez. What's Suarez, right?
Top tier.
Nasty grappler. Yeah. Nasty. Mm-hmm. You don't want to go to the ground with her. Yan Zhanao. Knocks her out in China, short notice. I don't even know what the fuck happened there, right? That was a little surprising, but Yan was going to win that fight anyway. Blanchfield, same deal. It's very similar to Suarez, where you don't want to go to the ground with Blanchfield. So this is the opposite.
Until last week, she was the new champion, right? The next champ. So
yeah. So so like when we look at it like that, she's lost to women who are better grapplers than her. Because her bully throw you on the floor, slam your face down, and beat your ass from, I don't even think it's like super skilled. It's more like a brute energy that she uses. That doesn't really work against Tatiana Suarez, who the minute you put her on her back, she will submit you. And she's just better than you at that. And so is Blanchfield. So I think here, this is where she's up against an opponent in Emrod that like is, her weakness is being put on her back. We've seen it over and over again. She always loses when she's put on her back. So yeah, I think if somebody's scoring well in this fight, it's probably Andrade. I don't mind it. I kind of think it's okay for cash. I don't know if we want to we have to compare it to those fights you mentioned. It's tough, man. Aljo's in the zone and he's better, right? And you've got just these fights that are in this price point that look better. Even whoever wins that Yuri fight, as you said, could be better. But Andrade scores big when she wins. Andrade, check this out here, just like a reminder of what she does. Yeah, against Dern, she scored 132. Against Murphy, the previous win, she scores 131. This lady scores well and wins. Calvillo,
consistent
110. She actually had a win against Chikwigian, who never lets up a big score. She puts up 132, and we were fading that shit. Like, oh, it's choke. She don't lose, right? So, yeah, 100. Against Namahana, her win scores are massive.
These are Max Holloway numbers.
Yeah, ridiculous. When she
people
wins,
just go, oh, women's fight next. Let Monk, me get
these numbers. Let this should be it. Like your computer should have exploded from Andrade this week.
Basically, and actually, she according to standard deviation, she is outside of Wei Li, I believe, the highest ceiling on the entire card, and that's just because Wei Li put up 150 in her last win.
There you go. So, yep. I mean, yeah, I'm not ignoring Jessica Andrade.
150. we shouldn't skate over that.
Against Lemos, who also got standing arm triangle. Jesus. I got to bring that up in a Andrade fight.
Oof. Ridiculous. So, I mean, there you go. You have it. You cannot fade Jay Sizzle's Andrade.
Can't.
Ever on DraftKings, because when she wins, it's 100+. She's at 8,100. Good price point. And actually, if you want to really think about this from a game theory perspective, yeah, everybody's getting sucked into, you know, Yuri and that fight, or, you know, everybody's getting sucked into
Aljo Cater.
Yeah, that's right. Which I really like, but that leaves Andrade fairly low owned. So I like the spot. I think it's probably one of the better tournament plays on the card. And I almost think that you can play Andrade in cash if you want. As a matter of fact, I don't think I can pick a cash guy out of Rakitic, Jiří. I'm not picking one of those two. Like, they're the same guy. But
if you're in this range, you're kind of in trouble. And I would
in cash. Urge you, yeah, you're probably not here. But if I had to,
urge you to get to Sterling somehow.
Yeah, well, there we go. But if I had to, that's the way I would go. All right, next up. This is a big card. Every fight is great, by the way. It's like shitting on Andrade Marina Rodriguez. That'd be the main event for the last two cards that we saw comfortably.
Oh yeah,
comfortably. Jalen Turner taking on Renato Moicano. Jalen Turner, another big score monk. You like Jalen Turner? I know you do.
I just like Moicano's post fight interviews. I want him to win just for that reason.
Yep.
Moicano +200 in this fight. Fight ends inside the distance. We got a -400 to end inside the distance. This one looks good. Jalen Turner, I don't think has ever won a fight outside of the distance. He's always in the distance, Monk. How's this guy doing it? He puts up big numbers.
Yeah, gigantic. No, yeah, and you're 100% right. Zero wins in decisions in his
pro career. Can we call it outside the distance? I want to start a thing.
Yeah, outside the distance. Yeah, it's kind of like outside the line. I like it.
Outside the distance.
OTD. I actually like it a lot better because some people mess up those FNGTD. It's like, dude.
Yeah, DGTG.
KISS. Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
What you call me?
Outside the distance. I like it. I mean, just this is the fourth fight of the night. Like, good God. I just saw Jalen Turner knock out Bobby Green like three times in a fight. The dude, tremendous scores over and over and over again. Who's he losing to? I mean, we're losing to Dan Mateusz Hooker.
Gamrot.
We're losing to Mateusz Gamrot and a three split decision, whether you think it should have been split or not. He went all three with Mateusz Gamrot, who's probably a fight or two away from being in contention here. And Moicano, man. I mean, this guy just gets better and better. Over his last five, he lost to RDA, and that was on super short notice. He got, you know, kind of worked on there, but again, I think it was like 3 days notice on a gigantic 170? Card. What's that?
What weight class was that fight at?
That was lightweight. It looks it like. I think so. I could be wrong, but I have it in as lightweight. Yeah. Then he subs Brad Riddell in what I think was Brad Riddell's last fight before he tried to come back recently. Beats Drew Dober. So Jalen Turner, you know, these guys are kind of beating the same level of guys lately. But man, how do you not like Turner here? He's got the height. He's got the reach. He's likely got the athleticism. Does he have the takedown defense? Now, Gamrot, super high level takedowns. Four takedowns landed against or Gamrot landed on him. Mullarkey took him down once. That's all the stats I have in the last five. Overall takedown defense, let's see, 76%. So 3% better than Moicano. Not that that means much because Moicano is more of a grappler, but still a decent number. But man, the number here at 8,900, I think, is very tempting for the Tarantula. And it's even tempting at on Moicano, because if Jalen, you know, gets taken down and is not able to get up or not able to reverse things, money Moicano, we might get to see that post-fight speech. So another one I really like for bigger tournaments. I probably don't mind a little of Jalen in cash, I guess, but even so, it seems a bit risky. But that said, four out of his last six guys, he's made the optimal lineup, Jalen Turner.
I don't think you need any of that in cash on a card like this. Too dangerous.
Not likely.
And a -400 inside the distance prop.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
I don't know that. That's because I think Moicano could knock him out.
That's all. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, Turner's been caught.
Can I talk up my boy here? Renato Moicano is one of my favorite dogs, if not my favorite dog, on the entire card. I love this matchup for him against Jalen Turner. You know, Moicano is not a guy. His last, you know, his losses, split decisions to Hooker and Gamrot, Matt Frivola. I'm talking Jalen Turner here. I'm on Jalen Turner. Sorry, Jalen Turner side. Gotta switch over. My thought process is backwards here. Jalen Turner can't stop a takedown every time he fights a wrestler. Frivola took him down four times. Brock Weaver, remember the guy who came out with an Indian headdress on his head?
Sure.
That guy took him down. Malarkey got him down once.
Brock Weaver got Jalen Turner down?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Mateus Gamrot, four takedowns. There you go.
Yeah, Gamrot. So I would say that, honestly, that Moicano's a level of wrestler between Gamrot and Jamie Malarkey. Malarkey was able to get a takedown in that fight. Moicano's also more dangerous. I've seen Moicano throw some of the most disgusting body kicks I've ever fucking seen. That fight against Calvin Kattar in Brooklyn. I remember being there sitting. That was some scary, scary shit. And what I like about Moicano is he's going to the wrestling now. He's got the two takedowns against Hernandez. He got three against Drew Dober. Drew Dober and Jalen Turner, to me, have some similarities. I've always said Drew Dober is a little underrated. He started to get some love and then got beat by Frivola, which I was on. Anybody who can wrestle, I think has got upside here against Jalen Turner. And Moicano can mix it up. He can wrestle. I think his kicks are really dangerous as well. Moicano is, he got knocked out by Fazeev, and he got knocked out by Chan Sung Jung and Jose Aldo. So Moicano can be finished. Those guys are all heavy hitters. So is Jalen Turner. So I'm not going to say the Jalen Turner win is not going to beat me. I'll probably be a little bit underweight, going to lean on the ownership to DFS Army this week. Make sure you go check that shit out. But I will be over on Moicano and under on Jalen Turner. And under does not mean fade. It's just one of those spots. Yeah. This is a dog who can, in my opinion, break this whole fucking slate and yell the F word and some other racial slurs I won't dare to say because I'll get canceled real quick.
Of all the people to get a knockout last week, Nora Cornhole doing it early.
I got 70% of my money back last week, and I had two or three cornhole lineups in 150, so I was super happy that I didn't lose all my money.
I can't believe you had any. I had no cornhole lineups.
Two lineups. It. Two.
Yeah, I did not make that money back. I'll tell you right now. That was bananas. But it's a reminder that anybody can knock somebody the fuck out. Even a woman with seemingly no knockout power whatsoever can get it done. So this is the UFC. These fights happen. And you know, this one's minus 400 to end inside the distance. I'm not going to go all in on the fight. There's too many fights on this card that are exciting from a scoring perspective. Normally I'm like, minus 400, I'm all in, 50-50 on these two guys. I'm not doing that for this card. I agree with you, Sniper. I think Moicano can win. I don't think Turner is a safe favorite here. I would not lay minus 230. I don't think that's a wise move to make with your money. I don't think I'm parlaying him with anybody. I could see Moicano winning the fight. So I'll have exposure on DraftKings. I don't have a super strong lean on who's going to win. I think somebody's getting knocked out, and I agree with you. I think Moicano might be able to use some of his grappling to negate some of that nasty length distance striking from Moicano. We'll see how it plays out. But both sides of this fight, exposure, neither one all in for me on this card. All right, next up we got what I think. I can't wait to hear your breakdown here, Monk, because on paper, this feels like maybe not such a high-scoring affair. Diego Lopez, Saduk Yosef, two really good fighters that I think will maybe negate each other a little bit. Lopez inside the distance is minus 105. Fight ends inside the distance minus 175. So the odds makers really, if anybody's winning inside the distance, they think it's Lopez or Lopes, as I actually think it's pronounced with this fellow. Saduk inside the distance is plus 380. So not so great. How do you see the one going down from a scoring perspective?
Yeah, I kind of am a little lackadaisical on this one. Lopes, much like Brendan Allen last week, what I say about him, I have been wrong about every freaking fight this guy's been in. And then I picked Chris Curtis, and hilariously, another split decision loss for Chris Curtis. That cost
me some money.
Chris Curtis started. I mean, he's hurt, but he started crying before the fight was over, just in case he didn't get the decision.
Dude, split decision. There was a lot of split decisions. I was on the underdogs in them. I feel good about those plays. I always feel good even though when you lose the money, when I pick an underdog and they lose a split, I'll tell you when you don't
one?
Feel good.
There was one more I was furious. There was one I was mad about.
It was bad.
What's his name? Argueta dominating the fight and then gets knocked out.
What do you guys think of the Morgan Charrier fight?
I thought Charrier won that 2-1.
Yeah, and I could have made. I thought I could make an argument for 3-0, and I was like, "What? Yeah. What happened?"
I was very surprised about
that's
that.
That's the one I was real mad about. I lost a unit on that one, and I lost a unit on Argueta. I was like, "Okay, I made good bets." I think.
I feel good though when my underdog pick, even when they lose.
Yep.
When it's a split, I'm like, I was on the right side. Like, yeah, you know, am I going +200 on Curtis, or should I have paid -200 and shit a brick?
Right.
For a split decision win on the other side. Like that could have gone either way. All right, I lost, but if I'm winning, I'm 200x.
Really, it should. I think it probably could have gone Curtis's way until that last 10 seconds, to be quite
honest. When something happened with his hamstring or something, like
tore it. Grade 3 tear, supposedly.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, that's real. That's the real.
I can lean into it. The Chris Curtis 8, I can embrace.
Yeah, I'll just keep this one quick here. Lopes is another guy that I can't place. I liked Evloev, and then Lopes had a ton of moments against him. And then I was bitter, and so I Gavin Tucker. Lopes scored 90 points in that win, and it was a first round win. He scored 0 points except for the actual win itself, over a minute and a half, which is kind of crazy. Then he beat Sabatini. I also picked against him in that one, and he got it, and he made me look foolish. Now, I'm probably I don't know, man. I just don't think either guy scores well. Like, Yusuf put up a really good score against Don Chaney. That's Don fucking Chaney. Lopes is not Don Chaney. He put up 68 against Caceres. Takes the L to Edson Barboza in a very good fight, especially for Barboza. I'm leaning Lopes, but I'm just not thinking this one has a ton of juice for DraftKings here. And I'm probably avoiding it in cash because I honestly don't know who's going to win. So very ever so slightly leaning Lopes, just probably because I've been wrong every goddamn time and I'm getting tired of it, frankly. But yeah, I think Yusuf has a really good shot to get a win here, but I think it goes to decision.
So this is the epitome of let's find out how good Diego Lopes is.
Yeah,
because Sadiq Yusuf loses to Edson Barboza in a 5-round maniac fight where they both had knocked a great fight. Dude. And Arnold Allen, a loss that has aged impeccably well. Diego Lopes, he looked good against Movsar. Movsar, you know, you can argue what he know about the guy, but he's run through Gavin Tucker and Pat Sabatini. Okay, Sadiq Yusuf way better than those guys. Probably not as good as Movsar, but a totally different fighting style. Totally different. Is Diego Lopes going to be able to go out and get Sadiq Yusuf down? Sadiq's only got like 60% takedown defense. Arnold Allen got him down a couple times when he needed to. But Sadiq does seem like the guy to go kind of and Edson Barboza took him down three times,
yeah.
That's the problem here is that if Lopes gets this fight in the ground, he wins it, can score decent. On the feet, I actually think Yusuf wins pretty comfortably. I'm going to side with Yusuf because he's cheaper. I think the line's a little wide and is a big step up for Diego Lopes. Am I telling you this is a super confident pick? No, this is one where, like I told you, I'm going to take some stands, play some taking stands. This is one I'm probably going to play pretty vanilla. I don't think it's going to take a lot to get over, or like it's not going to take up a lot, soak up a lot of ownership. If anything, I would say you make gun to my head. It's another one. I'm going to pick Yusuf and he's cheaper. I'd go a little over on him, but I kind of think 15% is going to get me over here. No, I don't think he's going to be heavily owned at all.
I wouldn't want to be much. I wouldn't want to be more than that. Cause even when he wins, he doesn't score well.
Right.
I'll
take it for the cornhole experience.
Yeah. It's just for the cornhole experience.
I was on that ride once.
Overrated. There's some places downtown, in New York where you can get the cornhole experience if you want. But as far as
Vegas,
as far as this fight goes, yeah, I actually think Sadiq Yusuf is going to win. And I'm probably going to bet him for some of the reasons you said. You just talk about Diego Lopes, his win condition being takedowns and a submission. Dude hasn't gone for a takedown yet in the UFC. It's been a few fights and it's pretty rare that these guys just start changing up what they do all of a sudden. And it's not like Sadiq Yusuf is some slouch, can't handle himself in the grappling. He's really good everywhere. So I think he just pieces him up. But you see what the odds makers think, which is plus 380 inside the distance for Yusuf because he is more of a points fighter. Mm-hmm. Lopes doesn't throw any volume out there. If he's not knocking you out, I think he's going to lose the fight. I think he'll lose the volume-based decision loss. That's what I think is going to happen here. I think Saduk Yusuf wins his fight by decision. Lopes does not get the finish, and he needs the finish to win the fight. So the problem is I don't really see a playable angle for that in fantasy, but we could certainly bet it, get a little bit of those DraftKings losses back. Fantasy losses back from the sportsbook version. That's how you make up for those losses. But yeah, I like Saduk here to get this decision win striking base. Neither one of these guys goes for, I don't get it, Monk. I don't get it.
I don't either.
Why do we think Lopes is going to start grappling? Maybe he will.
Because that's his specialty, basically. And yeah, but he's not offensively grappling. He has shown none of that.
We haven't seen it. So I'm not saying he doesn't have it. I'm just saying I haven't seen it. And why would I assume he's going to start doing it now? That's a lot of assume. You know what happens when you assume?
I've heard.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No. You make an ass.
Out of you and me. It's not just you. You bring me along with you. That's the worst. Kayla Harrison, UFC debut, taking on Holly Holm, grandma. Did you guys know she's a granny? She had her first granddaughter.
Oh, actually, I think I did hear that.
She's in her 40s. She's got grandchildren at this point. She's getting up there in age. Kayla Harrison, lots of hype. I got to tell you something. Cypher, it is dangerous. Laying minus 400 against Holly Holm. I don't care how old she is. This girl, if you give her the chance, will stand around the outside, points fight you, take a shot, get the judges make the call. Do you think that's what's going to happen here, or is Kayla going to come in and grapple fuck her?
It's probably the latter, but one of the more interesting things about this fight is Kayla Harrison going to make weight? Like she's been fighting at 45 for a long ass time in PFL, you know, and she lost. She's not unbeatable. She lost to Larissa Pacheco. I mean, she can be got at. It's like I wrote in my
notes. By the way, she also barely beat Aspen Ladd. Aspen Ladd was not some like UFC. Aspen Ladd had a nice little career in the UFC, but like she was mid, and Aspen Ladd put up a fight. In that PFL World Championship. I'm sorry. That's what I saw.
I'm pretty sure PFL Harrison does win this one, but that's a lot of juice. Holmes got the potential to keep it close. You know, Harrison's not in the minor leagues anymore. Let's see the step up. You're going to make me play a side of this fight. It's going to be Holly Holm. You can make me play a side because then I can go get Bo Nickel and Whaley and play up there. Like
Holly Holm doesn't score though. She's another one. Monk, I mean,
but this is one of those where if Holm's one of two dogs who wins and she's 6,900 and you got Bo Nickel smashing and Whaley smashing and you know, you need the salary. Sure. We rank every fight, by the way, for confidence rating, upside notes. This in terms of the overall fight rating, I gave it 2 of 5 stars. Like it's not a fight I really want to be investing in, but if you make me pick a side, it's got to be Holm.
Let me give you a Holm nightmare story. This Holly Holm, who never puts up a good score. Like if there has ever been DraftKings poison, it's her entire career, except for one fight. There was one fight where all of a sudden, I believe it was Megan Anderson.
It was Megan Anderson when she became Holly Holm Agamadoff.
Where I was like, what is happening? Khabib 2.0 is here.
Fantastic.
And I'm sitting there with a full fade on home, feeling all like she was expensive. And I'm feeling all like good about it. I'm like, yeah, all these idiots playing Holly Holm. What are they, nuts? She scores a 68 if she wins. And then she proceeds to put up one of the biggest scores I've ever seen. Takedown after takedown.
Yeah.
Who is that person? But throw that out. That is not who her opponent is. Kayla Harrison is the polar opposite of Megan Anderson. So, yeah, Holmes, all of a sudden, the last couple wins that she's had has been Mrs. Takedowns.
For what it's worth, she had more takedowns against Irene Aldana than she did against Megan Anderson. And same thing against Yana Santos. She had four take.
Hold on. Look at the career. I have the draft. Look at the career, okay, before the Megan Anderson fight. 0-0-0-0-0, one takedown, zero. And there are even more fights even below here. All zeros. Never went for a takedown. Not her thing. And then you're right. In the last three wins, 4-5-4. But look what happens in the losses. She's fighting against somebody who's a better grappler, a better grappler, a better grappler. She's losing, and she's not going for takedown. You know what Kayla Harrison is? A judoka. Better grappler. This is not the same. This is the opposite fight. But I actually think Holm is a better striker than Harrison.
Yeah, that's definitely has to be true. If it's not, then I don't know what the fuck Kayla Harrison's been doing, but I want some of that. But yeah, much better grappler. I mean, I'm kind of with Sniper here. 9,300 is too high for me to want to pay for a debuting fighter, especially against Holly Holm. Yes, she's 42. Yes, she apparently has at least one grandchild. You did say grandchildren, so possibly more.
I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Okay.
I was making fun of her age. I don't actually know if she has any. I don't follow her family situation.
That would be, I swear, I thought maybe I'm just like feeding that into my own.
I made that up. Like, I don't know.
I probably did that. I'm like, yeah, I think I heard that.
Oh, so I did hear that.
If I'm wrong, then
I appreciate then I your totally co-hosting. Up to
like, that yeah, right I heard now. That too. I don't want to get called out in the comments. I'll call myself out. But yeah, the point that you made about not scoring well, 84.75 per win. This is over her whole career. That is the lowest number on the entire card, right below Yan Xiaonan and Marina Rodriguez. And if you go to specifically three-round women bantamweight fights, 68 points per win. So you threw that 68 number out. That was exactly what it is. She's getting 93 dropped on her in her losses in those fights. Significantly less over her career, so I assume that's when you add in like five round losses and whatnot. But nobody's really scoring well against her. She doesn't score well and she wins. I'm leaning Harrison, probably. I don't know if I should say obviously, to get it done. And yeah, I'm just not too interested. I mean, I guess at the price I have to be a little interested in big tournaments, but nothing crazy. I think Sniper hit it on 2 out of 5 stars. I agree.
Yeah, I think there is some upside for Kayla because Holly's old and she could take a bunch of takedowns. And hey, you know, there's a lot of other even sexier fights up in that price point. So low ownership, that type of thing. But that's about it. Holm, I think you could play. But again, I'm hyper confident that Max Holloway in a loss will outscore Holly Holm even if she wins this fight.
That is a definite possibility. Yeah, like 5 round max. Yeah,
5 round max loses, and gets more than the 68 points that Holly would get in a win here. So I don't really see that many reasons other than if Holly could just get a knockout, which, you know, crazier things have happened. All right, this next fight, Monk and Sniper, would be the main event on even it's pay-per-view worthy main event. Like, but at worst, like, you know, a non-pay-per-view card that was one that they were hyping, it would certainly be a main event. And I'm talking about Aljo taking on Calvin Kattar. Love Aljo. It's my boy. New York.
People love to hate him. And I mean,
they
never
do.
Understood the hate of Aljo. I like the crew that hangs with Longo and Sarah. I like those guys. I like Marab. I like Aljo. They're super nice. I have met these guys before. I met them at an MSG event, and they're all really cool. They will sit with you and have a beer. This Aljo, I bumped into I don't even know who he was. The hair wasn't as high.
Right.
So I was like, is that Aljo? I wasn't sure. But good dude.
They're not the TJ Dillashaw crowd. TJ Dillashaw is a fucking cock.
No, they're not douchey. They're super nice, very humble, really nice guys. And so I'm a big Aljo fan. So take that in stride. Aljo -160. I have already bet Aljo in this fight. So spoiler alert: before that line moves, get your action in if you want to join.
What is Sterling wins by submission?
Sterling inside the distance is a solid plus 275.
Nah, I want higher. I want all of it.
You want by submission, you can get Sterling by submission plus 390. Sterling inside the distance is plus 275. So you're getting another 100 points to go Sterling by sub. I don't mind it.
I like it. This
How about Sterling inside the distance, decision, no action for the extra safety.
Yeah,
Peter doesn't knock this guy out.
This reads so much like the Sterling Sandhagen fight to me. It's crazy. Like, great striker against you guys forget Aljo. Remember, he's a human backpack. He gets a takedown here. I know it's at 145. Sterling's a big 35er. On the feet, not arguing with you. He's in trouble. Although he looked decent against Piotr Jan, but he gets takedowns. I think he's gonna take it. It's gonna be boring. People are gonna hate it, but I think he's gonna get a takedown. I think he's gonna hang out on Cater's back for a round or two and submit him.
All right, here you go. Aljo, scorecards equals no action. So this is the bet. I think that is the most comfortable, like from a safety perspective. You take Aljo inside the distance, decision, no action at minus 150.
I'm going prop squad. Give me the plus 350 for like quarter of a unit. Let me roll.
Do them both. There you go. All right. So with all that being said, Monk, these two guys are pretty proficient scorers on DraftKings and FanDuel, like fantasy producers. I think Aljo is a spectacular fantasy producer most of the time. How do the numbers look here?
Yeah, and they are a bit skewed. I mean, he put up 151 on TJ with that injured shoulder. But the one following up with 121 over Cejudo, 85 against Jan, 99 against in the DQ fight there. The origin story of the Sterling hate. Listen, I don't mind Sterling. I just love all the guys from the camp, I guess. How do you not like Ray Longo and his guys, basically? It's kind of how I see it. That said, Calvin Kattar, I mean, he's losing to Holloway. He did lose a split to Emmett, very, very close, even on paper. And then he loses to Allen, which is no shame in that whatsoever. But, I mean, he's looked –
Would you agree that Aljo beats Josh Emmett?
Yeah.
And Arnold Allen?
Well, yeah. I would have until Emmett went completely freaking nuclear.
Yeah, I think Emmett's a tougher match because he's got better wrestling and nukes in his hands. Yeah. I think Emmett's a tougher fight than Kattar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, honestly, I agree, man. I was wanting to play Kattar because I'm like, oh, he's the underdog, and I kind of need a couple of dogs here because I want to get those bigger names. But man, Sterling, like you said, with the backpacks, Kattar does have like a 91% takedown defense. He's only allowed two, but he's only had 23 attempted on him in his entire career. I mean, Marab attempts more takedowns than that in the pregame against Aljo before he goes out and fights. So I am a bit concerned about that. You
know who got the takedown?
Who's that?
You'll never guess it.
I know who it was because I'm relatively sure I was at that fight.
I don't remember.
The same card. Oh, no.
Chris Fishgold.
The second one.
Fishgold.
Fishgold.
Yeah. Oh, Zabit.
Oh, and Zabit got one too, but Fishgold got a takedown on Aljo as well. Zabit got one. I was just looking through to see on Kattar. I'm sorry. I was just looking to see if any of these guys went for takedowns. And what you'll notice is, you know,
they're all Kattar mainly strikers.
Anybody who's really even attempting a takedown.
Right. We've got Holloway. We've got Chikadze. We've got Allen. Emmett.
Obviously, Emmett doesn't go for takedowns either.
Not a ton. Nope. Ige does in certain matchups, but that wasn't one of them. Stevens, who knows? That was 2020 Stevens, that dude.
And he doesn't go for takedowns.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What did Zabit do in that fight? I'm curious. How many did Zabit shoot in that fight? Because Zabit will strike with you too.
That was a striking battle and a close one.
Zabit's the.
It doesn't show here on.
You got to click on the like next to his name, like where the stats are. No, like so go to the fight, and then click anywhere in the box there. Yeah, that's not his name, and it'll take you to the stats for the fight.
Oh, 1-4. So he did try 4. So yeah, this guy can. Yeah, you know that's fair. Zabit, you know he's got the last name of a wrestler, although. Beast. Doesn't always go for a ton of.
But he did a lot of the trip takedowns. He would body lock you and trip you. Yep. Aljo's going to shoot conventional American wrestling style takedowns. Yeah. And we're going to learn something about Kattar, I think.
And that's the other big thing that you already mentioned. I usually don't like when guys change weight classes, and then I'm especially going up and I'm like, oh, what are we going to see here? You said Sterling's a big one, and you're absolutely right. This is probably his more natural weight class, obviously. And yeah, man, at 8,400, dude, I mean, I think you guys kind of convinced. It's not like I was fully on Cater, but I think you definitely pushed me back in the Sterling direction. I mean, if he's getting a takedown, if he's going to backpack him, he could easily find a submission. And he scores really well when he wins. So, yeah, at 8,400, what is that? The 3.5 cheapest favorite on the card. I like the options there.
He is affordable.
Yep.
And look at these wins. Cejudo 121, TJ 152. You know, Piotr Jan is not easy to put numbers up against. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he got about 100, by the way, which is great for an $8,400 price point.
Yep.
He just doesn't have bad scores in most of his wins. They tend to be closer to 100, and that's what we need, Sniper.
Yes,
even sir. Hundo.
I'm all about Aljo. You know, a fellow Long Island guy. I'm all about Aljamain.
From the hood over here. So, well, we all kind of agree here on Aljo, but I would say Monk has a little bit of interest in Cater as well. I don't know how Cater scores well enough. It's like a lot of these other guys.
Yeah, 78, man. That's so expensive this week for a dog.
If Cater wins the fight outside of the distance, he's not going to score well.
Correct.
Mark it down.
Yep. I agree.
Well, I'm going to make outside the distance a thing. I'm just going to keep saying it.
I can't.
I back you.
Keep trying.
I back you.
Sniper doesn't support it at all.
I don't. I'm indifferent. Whatever. He
doesn't want to support
FNDGGDPT.
All right. Next up,
we've got
is that your crypto address? Can I send?
Yeah, exactly. That's my wallet.
Ether to that. Yuri Prozatska taking on Alexander Rakic, -121. Yuri, +101. Close fight. Let's see the inside of distance prop on this bad boy. -190. Not too bad. So, two big tough dudes, Monk. Tough to call. They both kind of remind me of each other. Yuri got the man bun going on. Kind of little that thing. Little Shogun bun. Beyond that, they're about the same guy.
I do love Shogun. In fact, after this is over, I'm going to watch the one from last night. So, you might have just swayed me. No, I agree. I don't know what to do here, to be quite honest. Yuri's the one that's making the optimal lineup. He's two out of his last three, I do believe. Because the Uzumir was before I started tracking. So against Dominic and against Glover. And Dominic win, you know, say, has not aged well. Still a good win, but hasn't aged well. And then Glover was, I don't even know, 40.
Oh, he's so old. Like, come
47
on,
and a half yeah. when he fought. Loses to Alex Padetta in the second round in what was a pretty good fight. I don't know. What are we going to get from Rakic, man? Like, he's got leg kicks. He's got striking, but he's relatively low volume. I mean, I'm looking at his last five. Outside, if you don't count the Volkan Uzdemir win, a loss when he put up 5 points or five strikes per minute, he's at 2.5, 2.4, 2.93, 2.4. And these are all like, you know, most of those have gone into the third round. So I'm just not... I don't know. I'm not seeing a lot of huge potential. I understand the inside the distance is -190. And the last time Rakic won inside the distance was Jimmy Manoa. Like, I don't know, man. I don't think either one of them is going to get finished, to be honest. And I think if someone does, it's probably, God damn, I don't know. I was going to say probably Rakic, but I honestly don't know. This is a close fight. I guess I'm going to favor the underdog slightly. But I, for some reason, I don't think I like Alexander Rakic. I don't know why. But I'm going to lean with the underdog slightly here. I don't know how
high the underdog
potential is. Go. Rakic is the underdog.
Prohaska is. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll take it further. I'll be a little more aggressive. I don't understand this fucking line. I don't get it.
Good.
Prohaska should be favored here, in my opinion. I have a bet on Prohaska at dog.
Really?
That's a slam dunk. Rakic is coming off that knee injury. He's not high volume. I do feel like that Prochaska is going to drag him into a war. Prochaska's one loss is to Alex Pajeda. Woo. Like, I know. Oh no, and to Vulcan in the split, right? Wait.
Yeah, the loss to Vulcan in the split was really egregious, like, for Ratchet.
Prochaska, what's Prochaska's loss? It's just Alex Pajeda. Oh, right?
Yeah, that's just the one loss. Yeah.
Like, okay, you lost to Vulcan, you lost to Jan. Dangerous striker to drag you, drags you into a war. I think that is Prochaska's world. Again, the guy's injured, and they're big guys at this weight class throwing just that kind of war. I have to favor Prochaska. I think Prochaska's, not that he should be minus 300, but I think he should be minus 140, 150, and I get plus money. Like, yeah. I think there's value there. Like Monk said, if anyone's going to make the optimal, I would think it's going to be Prochaska is more likely to get a big finish, and mm-hmm. Rakic he wins a fight that is more technical. So I'm more on the Prochaska side than Monk. I'm not riding the fence as much. I will not have much Alexander Rakic.
Here's my argument against Rakic for you.
Good. You're both really okay. Well, then I'm loving it.
He doesn't have like the greatest, like, he doesn't have a signature win. And by that, I mean, you know, he's got wins
in Jimmy Manoa's career. Jimmy Manoa couldn't eat a sandwich without getting knocked out.
No, like, this is late. Host. Devin Clark and Justin Ledet was a turd. So, like, his signature wins are Thiago Santos, who is very over the hill, and Anthony Smith, who's also very over the hill. So, effectively, he just keeps fighting these over the hill guys, and that's his wins. And it's not that impressive. It's not that Jiří has been like that much better, but it's kind of the same shit with Jiří a little bit as well. He really doesn't have a signature win. Beating Glover in 2022 is not that for me. And Dom Reyes is he in the UFC anymore? Like, something happened to that guy. He was great for a minute.
He keeps getting knocked out. Like, I don't want to call him Chinny because his chin is on a different fucking planet. He keeps eating brutal shit.
He shot his load against John Jones in that fight, and
right over the face, the John Jones drug tester. What?
He shot his load, and now he's finished. Like, John Jones basically ruined him.
Basically,
John Jones ruined that guy. So anyway, I don't even know. I lost my place, but so anyway,
nice things, John.
I'll go with Jiří as well to get this win. I think he's got a little bit more. I don't know. He feels a little more up and coming of a fighter to me, where Ratchet just kind of feels like, where the hell's he even been? When has he fought last?
He had a leg injury.
Yeah.
For like a year.
It's been a while. Like that Blankowicz fight in 2022. So we're 2 years out from his last fight. Yeah.
Where's he been, bro?
What's that?
I need Monk to stop singing.
That was the second. I had to work it in there a second time. He said it again.
All right. Well, I didn't hear the song happily. So I'm just going to move on to the next fight, which is the earlier mentioned Bo Nickel in what should be a smash spot against Cody Brundage.
Like, I get it's one of the best cards of the year. We're an hour in. We've done 9 fights. Let's not waste fucking time here. Cody Brundage should not be in the spot. This is building a Bo Nickel spot. Bo Nickel's going to get tested, much like Joe Pyfer got tested against Jack Hermanson. Cody Brundage is not the guy to do it. If you can fit Pyfer, play him, get him in cash games, and then make your decision on GPPs if you want to chase the big score or go underweight based on game theory. I'm probably going to go, in terms of 9K ownership, Whaley 1 and Nickel 2. But make your own decision from there, splitting hairs.
You know, smash. Monk, Nickel doesn't always score well because, A, he just submits you really quick, but not quick enough.
Yeah, that seemed to be the issue. The good thing for us is, and I won't take a lot of time, cheapest he's ever been at 9,500. He was 98, most expensive salary you've ever seen.
Really the cheapest he's ever been?
Yeah, he was 98 against Val Woodburn, scored 127, and he was 96 against Pickett, and he put up 100. Did he make opt? He made optimal, obviously, in the former fight. Brundage, yeah. I mean, dude, I'm asking my other buddies, like, does Brundage even have a chance? And they're literally fucking laughing in my face. Yeah, I completely agree. We're at minus 2,500, 2,100. It's Bo Nickel, cheapest he's ever been. I agree with you. Wiley and Nickel are one and one A, basically, yeah. However you want to do it.
I've watched a lot of UFC, studied a lot of game odds and fight odds and everything. And this is the first time that I recall seeing a fight that was minus 1600 to end inside the distance. Now, I don't know if that's the highest that number has ever been in a fight. I'm not going to say it was. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but it's the highest number that I recall ever seeing.
It's fucking high.
It's higher than Lewis Ngannou was. That's probably, I think.
Yeah. Shut up. Shut up. Don't ruin good things like this card by bringing that shit up.
higher than
redacted. Yeah.
Well, it's the highest I've ever seen. Fight ends inside of this minus 1600. I think it's ending inside the distance. And if it's not, you know, the odds makers give it about a 7% chance. So
if not, I'm going to be messaging Monk all kinds of nasty things that are ruining this fight. Yeah.
So it's probably a fight that ends inside the distance. I don't know what else we need to talk about that one. Bo Nickel will submit this guy. It's just a question of when, how quickly, and how much work he does on the way. There is a scenario where that only scores like 97 or 100.
Yeah, we got to hope for a knockout if we're playing him in DraftKings.
Yeah, something other than, but Cody Brundage is terrible. All right, Charlie Olives.
Let's go.
I'm excited for this fight. Mm-hmm. Taking on Arman Saryukin. Saryukin minus 225. What? Do Bronx plus 200? Excuse me?
Crazy times, man.
Hold on a second. Yep. I got this. Wait a minute. Let me say that again. Rewind that for me. And we're going to say Charles Oliveira at plus 200. Say what now?
How dare you?
I was wondering what was happening.
I have her queued up for just such occasions.
Of course you do.
How dare you?
All right, let's see. The fight ends inside the distance, minus 285. Not too shabby at all. Two really good fighters. The main event, this could have been a pay-per-view main event fight. This could have been a headliner at any UFC event. This is a great fight. Everybody loves DuBronx. Literally, everybody loves it. I don't know why everybody loves him, but everybody loves DuBronx. Like a guy that we used to think couldn't take a punch, all of a sudden becomes a good striker too. Like he starts his career. Like he's evolved so much. I love that we got to watch DuBronx from like the age of 19. And now he's in full form in his peak. And he's an underdog against another really solid fighter in Arman Saryukin. So this one should be exciting. What do you say, Monk?
Yeah, I love this fight. I've been talking to people close to me, huge on the Charles Oliveira side. And honestly, at this price, how could I possibly disagree with them? I mean, he's making the optimal lineup in three out of his last five. And he's also cheaper than he's been in his last five. He's been 7,600 against Poirier and Benny. And now we get him at 75 against a dude in Arman Saryukin who looks A, unstoppable, and B, like a goddamn superhero. Have you seen his pictures lately? This guy is on all of the best vitamins. I don't even look like that when I dream about myself. And it's ridiculous. And he's putting up decent scores, not against, you know, great. I mean, Joel Alvarez, 116. Ismagulov was 98. He put up 124 against Silva on super short notice. Got the job done, but had a moment where it didn't look great. But that's just a moment. Who cares? You know what I mean? 103 against Benny and almost a quick win bonus. He almost had 128 points there. This is a fantastic fight, man. But if you're going to give me Charles Oliveira at 7,500 plus 200, bro, I am going to play that. So I like Charles Oliveira here. I think he's got multiple paths to victory. That said, none of those paths are easy. Armin is a beast. But man, Charles at 7,500, like that is hard to pass up. And when he has been at 7,600, Benny, he scored 113 optimal. Dustin scored 94, I think optimal. I don't know for sure, but I would guess. So yeah, let's make it 3 for 3, baby. Charlie Olives, let's go.
Sniper, DuBronx ran through all the studs. I just, this is so disrespectful.
Yeah,
he ran through all of them.
I have nothing new to add here. Like, Sarukian, could he wrestle him? Sure, that puts you in danger of the submission, the great sub game. I, in the past, doubted, you know, you go back to, like, the Paul Felder fight, and I have doubted DuBronx in the past. You know, I lost to Pettis, lost to Felder, and there was, he did not look good in those fights. He was getting finished, did not look good, was borderline quitting, and the dude comes storming back, makes improvements, proves some haters, including myself, wrong, and then just got to a point where, even for me, he was undeniable, and he's still that guy. Being champ is hard. He got finished by Islam Makhachev. Okay, we're holding that to the point against him where he's a, this big of a dog against Arman Tsarukyan. Line's wrong. What's worrying me is that Islam everybody
destroy,
is...
Yeah, didn't Islam destroy Arman, or was that... Yeah.
No, that was closer than... That was...
That was his UFC debut, and he lost to Islam also. Oh, like, yeah, all right, yeah, both these guys lost to Islam. So
what worries me a little bit, and as the week goes on, is that I totally agree with that. Everybody's saying that, and the line's not moving.
Yes, right?
That's fucking... That's weird. The biggest red flag. I'm like, okay, Vegas... If you don't think Vegas is sharp, there's something wrong with you up there. You have some kind of ego. Like, you need to be trusting Vegas. And there's something about this where, look, Dariush, sorry, DuBronx is going to be one of my most played dogs on the card. But thankfully, I have other dogs to choose from because of the five rounders. We got some we've already talked about. If this line doesn't start to move, I'm slowly talking myself out of an overweight position to DuBronx because everyone else is going to do it. And it's really just that because my read on the fight is the same as everybody else's. It's DuBronx. I don't understand the line. He should win. It makes perfect sense. The line's not moving. I'm getting frustrated.
Right.
So DuBronx is the pick. But as the week goes on, I find myself going, maybe I shouldn't let an Arman Tsarukyan win beat me. So that's where I'm at.
It's weird. If anything, the line has gone the way of the other way. So
everybody's on DuBronx.
Yeah, it is. Everybody's on DuBronx, I'm sure. And yet here we are. But DuBronx makes sense at plus 190. That's why we're all on him. I don't know. You know, by the way, if this fight is minus 110, minus 110, who would I think is going to win? I don't know. It's a pretty close fight. Like, you know, I don't think Tsarukyan is easy guy to take down. I kind of think he'll keep it standing. DuBronx is going to have to strike with him, probably.
DuBronx is coming a long way in the striking.
His striking is good.
He's put strikers down. He's crazy. Yeah.
Of course, maybe some of that is he's... Those guys are prepping for the takedown, so they have to be ready. I don't know, but
maybe
his striking's good. Like this guy, like I said, DuBronx, he ran through Dustin. He ran through Justin Gaethje, who right now is fighting in for a championship. Like
this line opened on that can't be right. It says this opened on DraftKings. They opened Charles Oliveira plus 110, and he's plus 200 now. That BetOnline says they opened it at plus 170, and it's plus 190 now, and it was plus 145 at some point. So throughout the week, the money's coming in on Tsarukyan, or Vegas is taking a larger position on Tsarukyan.
So don't bet this fight yet, or don't bet Oliveira yet.
If it keeps doing that, I'm going to have an uncomfortable decision to make on Friday.
There's absolutely something to that. When everybody's on a side and it doesn't move, that's usually a really bad sign. That's very concerning. All right. Speaking of another side or a fight that I think is a little even closer than these close odds indicate, we've got Justin Gaethje taking on Max Holloway. Ooh, can't wait for this one. Now, I've got some stuff to say about this one, but Justin is a minus 160 favorite. With the fight ends inside of this minus 130. So five rounds of violence. The odds makers are looking for a decision, which I totally, totally agree with. And you know, we all saw Max not win against Dustin, and everybody's like, well, you know, when he stepped up in weight class, no good.
Well, he didn't deal with the power. He didn't deal with that's something I've said, because he didn't deal with the power well, and Gaethje's got more of it. Like, that's it's concerning to me. It's if Holloway, but Holloway's, you know, the tough Hawaiian motherfucker. I just think Gaethje's going to be too much for him. But this is a fun one, and it's not one. This is one where load up, play. Like, I can actually make an argument that the co-main and the main are not all-in fights. They're heavy exposure fights, but they're not all-in fights. I could make the argument. This is an all-in fight.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there's no argument here.
Of the 3-5 rounders, this is in every single one of my lineups. Has to be.
One of these two guys belongs to your lineup. And by the way, I'm going to say this, and I said it before, Monk. Max Holloway might be the nut underdog in a loss.
Boy, that's bad for my lineups.
Five rounds of potential action here. The odds makers think it's going the full five. Now, it might not, but Max Holloway is probably as tough of a motherfucker as exists in the UFC. And five rounds of action, massive volume between these two. I mean, tell me the numbers, Monk. Just spit some fire numbers here. But, you know, the strikes per minute have to be crazy with these two guys.
That's the first column I was looking at, even in just the last five for Holloway. I mean, five rounds. 17.8 strikes a minute against Calvin Kattar. It's making me excited thinking about the numbers to the point where I almost have to take myself off camera. It's 445 significant strikes land, like, ruined Calvin Kattar's DraftKings numbers forever. Like, you always have to take that fight out when you're talking about Calvin Kattar now. Rodriguez, he lands 230, bro. 230, 9.2 a minute. 5 a minute against Volkanovski in a loss, 5.8 against Allen, 7.2 against Jung. On Gaethje, it's 4.4 against Khabib, all right? Then it's 7.7, 6.2, 6.8, 6.8 against Fiziev and Poirier. My God, 100% fight, all in. I love, you know, at first I'm like Max Holloway at 7,400 in a five-round fight. I mean, what are we doing here? I'm putting this guy in my lineup. Putting him in my cash lineup. I'm making room for my Bo Nichols, for my Zhang Wei Lees. But Justin Gaethje, man, is just what Sniper said at the beginning. He's got way more power, and he might just be too much for Holloway. These leg kicks might mess up Holloway's legs to the point where he can't quite move as well as he usually does. And if you're telling me this goes to a decision, my goodness, I think either guy could score fantastically in five rounds. Just off the strikes, take out all the grappling, if there is any, which there probably isn't. But take those points out, make it a zero. These guys with these 7 strikes a minute, 6 strikes a minute, 10 a minute numbers for 25 minutes, that scores a shitload of points, not to mention any of the non-significant strikes landed. Just a ton of them between these two. Love this fight. Picks probably Gaethje, though, for me personally.
The only thing I'm thinking about here, Sniper, is there a scenario where this just doesn't go the way we think, and they're just dancing around, kind of throwing 25 strikes per round a piece?
No.
And just like, it's just a disappointment.
It's like,
you know, like the Frankie Edgar fight, like the Holloway Edgar fight, where Holloway is just kind of toying with him and ends up not.
The way this is not on the optimal is that Gaethje has a hard time lining anything up and landing early and comes on late and gets like a third or fourth round finish of Max somehow. That's how this doesn't get there, is he struggles early, can't find his timing. Max is a good mover, good counter, and eventually Gaethje lands a head kick like he did against Poirier or something big and gets a third or fourth round finish. I mean, I'm kind of grasping at straws, but that's how it could play out, I guess.
The only thing I'm going to add here is, listen, I really want to see what Holloway looks like. Monk, I agree with you. Like, you know, at first thought, you would think like Holloway, a little slight relative to what Justin Gaethje is. But he's had a lot of time to prepare for this fight and to thicken his body up for it. So, you know, when you're killing yourself to get down in weight all the time, when you're a 5'11" man, you know, yeah, you have to keep your body in a certain condition all the time. When you're like, hey, I'm fighting up 2 weight classes, even. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I think he's going to thicken his frame up a little bit. He is the same general size as Justin Gaethje, so it's not like they're both 5'11". So you know, they both have similar sizing. You know, it's just like Holloway was fighting, and he had the superpower of dropping weight. He is giving up his superpower to not drop the weight in this fight. So I'm curious to see how that affects everything. We saw with Conor McGregor, for example, as he continued to go up in weight class, that power just did not translate for him. And so I made a mental note after seeing that, like, oh yeah, when these guys move up, you know, some of their superpower is eliminated, but Max has another volume based, you know, accuracy and volume based superpower. So he's got a couple things that he does.
That's going to feel like that potentially could feel like pillow fist to Gaethje. He's used to 155 or slam it on his head. He's got Max, who's a volume guy at 45, trying to knock him out.
It's not that he's trying to knock him out. That's not what Max is doing. Yeah. Max is but in there piecing him up.
Care? He's a psycho.
He's just there to piece you up. Max is there to land 190 strikes on you over the course of five rounds.
I'm the best boxer.
What if Gaethje gets tired?
If this goes five rounds, is Max a low salaried lock for cash?
Yes.
It's locking. It's got, you have to play Holloway and cash.
I'm going to give you another, I'm going to give you the bet on this fight as well. I want to pull up the odds for this, but this is another one where, we want to,
you're going
to
say Gaethje by finish, scorecards, no action.
That's, or the opposite that, but I like that one too. And as a matter of fact, I think that is more bettable. Gaethje, Max does not finish this fight. He does not win inside the distance. That does not happen. So you can go Gaethje inside the distance, decision, no action. And I just want to see what that number is.
I think you mean outside the distance.
No, Gaethje inside the distance. Oh. No, not outside. Max outside.
That was funny.
I like it.
Objectively funny.
I'll be looking for that on the show with Lou later on.
Exactly.
Those references.
I'll source you.
Yeah, there is no source. Sure, just say it as if this is the most what everybody says that. What you just gotta put it out there. No,
you can also source me in all your Chris Curtis hate and the wife for the crime bet.
Appeared in my window like a lunatic. Scared the crap out of me. All right. Where were we?
Co-main event.
Here we go. Another great fight. Could headline any pay-per-view. Zhang Weili. Yan Zhanaun.
Or is it Weili Zhang and Yan Zhang? Which one's first? I never know.
I don't know. I don't fucking know.
I think you switch them. So it's Weili Zhang, but I think you say Zhang Weili and Yan Zhanaun.
But it's supposed to be Yan Zhanaun. So there we go. Yeah. Minus 500. Again, wow, what a fucking line. That is crazy. Because these two are some nasty fighters. They're both really, really good.
They're going to call them nasty women. That's what I thought you were going to say.
No.
Some nasty women.
They're nasty fighters. Man, I respect these ladies. Minus 500 for Zhang Weili. You could see that there has been some betting action to push this from minus 350 all the way down to minus 500. So money rolling in on Weili. Five rounds of violence. Fight goes the distance, plus 125. So probably leaning towards a five rounder or mostly five rounder. Monk, these are proficient scoring fighters. No,
that might be at least one side, the understatement of the year. And let me correct myself. I think I said Zhang Weili put up like 150 against Amanda Limosh. Zhang, I'm very sorry, because she scored 190.81. I was just looking at her average winning score in specifically five round strawweight fights. We've got one, it said 141, so I had to do one of these and then look at the scores. Looks like Joanna was 132. She put up with 136 on Andrade. I mean, 121 on Aguilar. I mean, the numbers, 104 on Jędrzejczyk, and the other fight, just the numbers are insane for this woman, man. Zhang Weili is DraftKings freaking gold. When I say Marab is DraftKings gold, that's just me rooting for my guy. Whether he is most of the times DraftKings gold. Zhang I will argue is. This.
Marab is more DraftKings gold than Zhang Weili. No one is greater than Marab.
It's, dude, it's close. I mean, I'm Marab's my all-time favorite, so at least current favorite. I don't know about all-time. Made a little hyperbole there. But so I'm with you, but the numbers for Zhang are astronomical. 117 per win in her career, Her ceiling is extremely high. I mean, this woman, 5 points a minute outside of Bo Nickel, highest on the card, allows two. Inside the distance, 6.16 allows 1.59. Meanwhile, Yan Xiaonan allowing 3.5 points per minute inside the distance. And I think that's what this boils down to. Yes, 7K is a very tempting salary when you're looking at this 9K range. But man, Yan Xiaonan, 85 points per win on average. In her five round fight, it's 90. So we're not getting anything too crazy. But the takedown defense is 71 now, but I think it's going to get worse, man. Zhang Weili, I think, is just probably better everywhere. Could I be surprised? Sure. I was surprised kind of with Yan Xiaonan recently, as it was anyways. But man, I got to play Zhang Weili here. She's one of my favorite plays on the entire card. And unless I get really surprised, I think she has potential to score a ton of points, whether it's a finish or a five-round decision. I hope it's a five-round decision. Let's break 200, Zhang. Let's go.
I don't have a whole lot to add. Zhang is one of my favorite plays in the card. Yan is not the one here, I don't think. I think has overachieved a little bit, and good for her. Likeable. Yeah, we're all waiting on Weili Tatiana, and if she fucks that party up, I'm going to be mad at her, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. But this is Whaley's spot. I think she can get takedowns. She's more powerful. Yan, I think she's got more volume. She's stronger. She's better grappler. Like, okay. And she's got five rounds to work rather than Nickel, who's got three and probably a quick fit. Like, there's just more pass here, and she's cheaper. For me, this is my favorite play on the card, Zhang Weili.
Yeah, not much to add there. Zhang Weili, no joke. I do think that both sides of this fight are somewhat viable, because the winner is absolutely going to be in the nuts lineup here, or super, super likely to get there. But, I mean, the odds makers are telling you something. They're pushing Zhang all the way up to minus 500. You got Xiaonan now plus 375. So, yeah, give her that 20% shot of winning. If she does win, she will be in the winning lineup. That's what's going to happen. So I'm not ignoring Xiaonan at all. I think, yeah, if she wins, she's in the nuts. So you have to accept it, embrace it. But yeah, if Zhang Weili is going for takedowns and achieving them, she's going to win the fight. Yeah. Will she do it? She usually does. So I don't see why that would change. But that's the win condition. If she's doing that and she's achieving those takedowns, she will win this fight.
By the way, before we get to the main, I was doing I wanted to start looking at cash lineups in the pod just real quick. Remember earlier we said if you land in that middle range, you're in trouble. Yeah, I think the chalk build is, you have decisions to make right in that range. It's real.
You do wind up there, right?
It's not fucking nice when you go Weili Nickel, stack the BMF fight, and punt with Holly Holm as your punt. You have 8,200 left.
There you go. That's Andrade, baby.
That's woo-hoo. You land right in that spot.
Let's see another standing arm triangle. What other ground submission could we see her pull off standing? I want to see it. Standing anaconda. We'll call it a standaconda. Let's go.
All right. Main event, the headliner. And again, I can argue that this is the least good of the three five-round fights that we're about to see. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there's an argument to be made. Do with that what you will. Alex Pereira against Jamahal Hill. Close fight. Pereira, champ, minus 130. Hill, comeback, plus 110. Fight ends inside the distance. Minus 450. So, you know, I don't know if this is lock button stack, but you want the winner of this fight in your lineup this week. I'm pretty confident in that. And I will have one of these two fighters in every single lineup I make for this particular card. So let's hope it doesn't get canceled, because that usually happens when I go all in. But
UFC 300 main event.
Canceled. Yeah. You gotta be all in on this fight, guys. Pereira versus Hill, both strikers. Not a lot of grappling normally coming out of Jamahal Hill, but you'd think hey, if I'm going to try to beat Alex Pereira, I kind of want to do a big grappling. So how does that work?
He's not going to do that. He's going to go forward, try and volume. And I think that plays right into Pereira's hands. And he's going to land a big counter strike. The reason why the argument I can make here is that Pereira's not especially high volume. You can have that feeling out period. And if you get a second or third round knockout here, even in these mid-eight salaries, I don't think that's going to do it. And that's kind of how I see the fight going, unfortunately, is Hill kind of getting off a little bit quicker, Pereira getting his timing and destroying his face with a check left hook in round two, and Pereira scoring like 90 points.
You don't think that score is enough?
On this card? Probably not. And this is the one fight I'm struggling the most what to do with, because I want to play it. That's my read on the fight. It's in a Pereira win that way. It's not a super confident take, but when I play it out, that's how I play it out. But I see plenty of paths where we don't see a huge score in this one, where they're kind of you got Hill with the ring rust coming off an injury. What if he's low volume? These guys could stare at each other for a while. These, like you said, like what if Holloway and Gaethje kind of stare at each other and throw 25 strikes around? These guys could do that. And it's when I have two other five-round fights I want pretty much all of, this one kind of takes a hit. And this is the one I'm struggling with. And right now, I'm probably going to play more Pereira, but I'm probably going to be underweight to the fight. I kind of have an opposite take here.
Interesting. Monk, you feeling that way too? You're feeling the underweight here?
I actually am, to be honest. This is if I'm picking one of three of the main three we just talked about to fade, it's going to be this one. And for exactly the reason Sniper said, Alex Padetta, low-ish volume, you could argue. And Jamahal Hill scores well when he lands 230 freaking strikes on a 47-year-old Glover Teixeira and it goes five rounds, or he beats, knocks out Jimmy Crute in less than a minute, gets the quick win bonus. Outside of that, he is the second most expensive underdog on the card. And with the paths that Sniper just laid out, there is definitely a possibility where this scores 80, 90, less than 100 points in a win, and it's just not good enough. What if Charlie Olives wins? What if, anything down there? I mean, there's too many salaries
Androge
below.
Androge can put up a monster score.
There's too many salaries below Hill, in my opinion, to kind of go all in. And I agree. I'm picking Padetta to win. I'll be higher on him in DraftKings, but this is one I want to look at DFS Army's ownership before I make any hard cutting decisions. But I'm kind of in agreement with Sniper here.
That's a reminder, by the way. We're deep in this podcast, to hit that like button if you enjoy these breakdowns. We're doing DFS across everything. We're breaking down NASCAR on Sundays for you guys. All throughout the week, pitchers, everything.
I almost won a golf tournament following Josh's notes last week.
Yeah, John, crushing. We got the Masters
this
week.
Denny McCarthy folding.
DFS Army subscribers, if you are in our Discord, we are running a Masters member appreciation free roll. We're giving swag. We got all kinds of stuff in there. So make sure if you're in the Discord that you go and find that. It's a free roll on DraftKings for the Masters. And we got all kinds of swag prizes and cool stuff in there for you guys. So we try to run these member appreciation contests, whenever a big sporting event happens, so we can give away some swag and have a little bit of fun with the members. We've got that going on.
We should do a UFC 300 win. I know it's late and it's Masters.
It's too late. It's too late.
Bastard.
But you're right. This would have been a good one for a member appreciation as well, like the greatest card. But you know what? There's another really good card coming up in a few weeks. So why not? Yeah, there's another good one. But come back to this fight. Listen, you guys convinced me a little bit that maybe not going all in on this main event, on the third five-rounder. Again, the other two, I think, are lock buttons. So maybe
if those two fights weren't on this card, I'd be with you. Those two present a problem.
I still think it scores well. Five rounds of action. I don't agree that these guys are low volume. I just haven't seen that. Like, it's not like Pereira is not landing five strikes per minute. But I think he can land five strikes and land 25, 30 strikes around and then get a knockout and he'll score well. So I'm not super going to fade it or anything like that. But listen, instead of 100%, maybe we'll go 70. Leave some room for some others. We'll see how. Listen, it's early in the week. We're recording this on Tuesday. A Sniper is out for the week.
Going to Disneyland. I got a Disneyland. I got a 3:30 a.m. wake up call, boys.
Again, he's going to Disneyland.
No. I'm going to California.
Another Disneyland.
I'm going to California. You know,
Sniper, I've met a few people in my life that are Disney people. You are one of them.
I absolutely like. My wife was. I like Disney. I won't say. I don't think I can blame it all on her. But she worked there. She was. Like,
she worked it for Disney.
She did the Disney College program. Loved it. Made a lot of friends. And it slowly, I was kind of like you, but slowly she's gotten me into it. I've seen some of the adult things to do at Disney, and I'm down. No, we're going on a cruise in August. That's not Disney related.
Disney people. Don't deny it.
We are travel. We're travel people, but Disney's way up there.
But Disney is a big part of that travel. It's up no there. Matter where you're going. Lie. There's usually Disney close. We're going to next, Bermuda we're going to hear this. He's going to France.
And yeah, I was like, gonna say going to France.
Oh, you're going to France? No. Oh, that's so nice. Where are you going? Paris? He's like,
If you want to, I got Bermuda in August. And for my 40th, we're going to Europe, but we're not going to Disney. We're doing a Mediterranean cruise, Italy, Greece. So we're travel people.
I'm glad that you're not going to Euro Disney.
This
you don't
time.
Want to go to that. It that is the worst of the Disneys.
Is it? I've never, I don't.
You don't want to go to the Euro Disney. No. Anyway, where were we? So who wins this fight? Perea Hill? Sniper, how are you leaning? Because I don't remember what you said.
Pereira.
Same.
Counter-strike. Yep. Hill going forward. Check left hook of death.
Bam.
Yeah, I can see. I think it's a tough spot. It's a tough spot for Jamahal Hill because I think we would all kind of think that Perea is just a slightly better technical striker than Hill, and there's not going to be any real grappling here. But what if Hill comes out and shocks the world and does a grappling heavy plan? He knows how to do it.
He could make up for that meme of his arm hanging by his side when Paul Craig broke it.
This ain't no Paul Craig that he's facing here. He's facing a guy who doesn't know how to do anything on the ground or is not very good. Like
he's going to go try and tag in Glover from his corner. I'm on the ground. Help. Tag.
I mean, if Jamahal Hill just comes in with a grappling heavy sort of approach, again, he's never done it in the UFC. So it's like that other fight. There's no evidence that Jamahal Hill knows how to go get a takedown or has any interest in getting one. But like, my guess is he probably would.
And people... People like to hate on Jamahal Hill. I'm rooting for Jamahal Hill. Gigi were there. We got the
draft. Don't tell him Jamahal Hill twice. Yeah.
Don't tell him that because he'll call you names for giving him props on Twitter.
No. I've met Jamahal Hill at two different DraftKings events. The MMA championships this past year, they brought Jamahal Hill up to the suite.
He hates the online shit, clearly, but in person, super nice guy.
People are like, yeah, I can't wait to see you fight. And they're like, what are you talking about?
I don't think he's got no patience for online people, but he was the only fighter who's watched all the prelims with us. He watched all the prelims.
At the event that I was at with Sniper here in the New York area, he wasn't just there. He brought a smoking hot girlfriend with him. And I was like,
I was going to let that go. But
yeah, like, oh my God. Like, I was like, all right, being the champ has its bennies.
The only fighter I've ever seen in person with a hotter girlfriend was Chase Hooper. Holy shit.
Fucking Chase Hooper. Goddamn.
I was confused.
Put a little bit of testosterone in a Gen Z and the women, you have your choice of any woman. That's it. That's Chase Hooper. Choose whatever you want.
Gen Z equals pussy.
No, it's basically the boys are all low T. So, I mean, he's got a smoking hot girlfriend for whatever that's worth.
There you go.
But yeah, it's a tough stylistic matchup for Jamahal. My first thought was I like Jamahal though. I don't know why. My first thought when I saw this one was like, I was kind of leaning his way. I think it's too tough to call though. I think you guys are probably right leaning Perea if I have to really think it all the way through. So main event, tough one.
Kill shots.
What an awesome card. Now time for the kill shot. We got through it considering that this is, you know, like a really packed fight. We got through this. You know, reasonable time. So let's talk about a kill shot, an underdog that can get the win and help us win our DraftKings lineups. We usually try to avoid the main event underdogs here there's really only one main event sure that I really like here, and that's Max Holloway. So with that being said, let's go through. Guys, Sniper, who do you like for your underdog pick to win the kill shot?
Let's see. I'm trying to find a good quote here. Let's see. Oh, here's a good one. I want to kill the bad guys. I'm going to go get my wife pregnant and cash on not doing Moicano.
There it is.
Like, the dude is out of his fucking mind.
What didn't he say right before that? He wanted to be a cop so he could kill bad guys. So great. Yeah,
it's I want to kill the bad guys. I'm gonna go get my wife pregnant. Like, okay.
He's the Brazilian Teddy KGB.
Why am I? Are these who are you quoting?
Moicano, he gets on the mic afterwards and just screams ridiculous shit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's
Moicano wants money. Like, he's the Brazilian Teddy KGB. It's
oh, I love it.
He's out of his mind, and I think he's got a clear path through grappling and against Jalen Turner. Those kicks of Moicano can be a problem. So
I love that call. So highly supportive of that particular call. How about you, Monk?
We already discussed, so I know which two we're down to. I'll just take one here. It's going to be Charlie Olive, $7,500. How do we pass this up? I mean, it's not a five rounder. We're looking good as far as kill shots. Fantastic.
Love Charlie Olive's, of course, as well. And I'm going to pick Max Holloway as my kill shot here. I think what I love about this one is even if he loses, you'll probably win because he's putting up probably more points than most of these underdogs in this loss. If he loses, you got to play guys like this. Also, like kill shot, strategy shot, whatever you want to call it. When you're making 150 lineups and you could lock button two or three fights, it is not that difficult then to Tetris around the rest of the fights to find a W. So there are two absolute lock button fights on this card between the Wiley Zhang and Gaethje fights where you're just going to make sure you have one or the other in every lineup. So that combination really does allow you to max enter with fewer variables that you need to cycle through. And then if we pull out some of these turds that aren't going to score well, now you're in business of like a couple of strategic fades here on some of the fighters that we talked about. And I think that you could look really good. If you want to see the cheat sheets with notes and fight ratings and breakdowns from not just Sniper and not just Monk, but also the rest of the DFS Army MMA team, Vince and Gino in there. And of course, I'm in the Discord.
And Eric, you can't forget Eric.
Oh, and Eric Forsland. Eric with, of course, the cash guy as well. So we got a big team of contributors in DFS Army, rocking the MMA channel, hanging out in the Discord, watching the fights, talking bets as well. Everything. If you enjoy that stuff, get in our Discord, get in on the conversation with us. Have fun for UFC 300. Can't wait. Let us know who your kill shot is in the comments section below. My kill shot is like, I got a second kill shot. It's called order wings and burgers for this fight and really make it an event for UFC 300. Right. It should be an awesome card. It's going to be an awesome card. And this is like a rare occasion. Don't make plans on Saturday. I'm gonna tell the wife right after this show, like, we ain't doing shit on Saturday. All right, I'm watching the fight. Then she's gonna be like, no, we are going. And I'm like, no, I really want to watch the fight. She's like, no, we're going. And then I'm like, all right, I'm recording the fights. Just kidding, I'm watching these fights, man. Prep the blue moons and all of that. Good luck this weekend, guys. Helmets up. See us in the Discord. We're talking fights all throughout the week. Take care, everybody. Enjoy your vacation, Sniper.